Woods and Water, South Carolina, here on 94.5 WGTK, The Answer in Greenville. I'm not actually sitting here today. I'm at a conference at the National Wild Turkey Federation this weekend. A lot of things going on down there with the Palmetto Shooting Sports Complex. Some things they're doing with the mentoring program, like the Take One, Make One that South Carolina Department of Natural Resources has. So this is a recorded show, but it's a good one. Good information here today. And, you know, growing up in Chester, South Carolina, in the late 60s, early 70s, there was only one thing to do when you hunted. Well, two things, actually. You had opening day of dove season, and then you had bird hunting. And when you said bird hunting, you, of course, you meant Mr. Bob White, Bob White Quail. And there's an event that happened last year I wasn't able to make it down to. They're actually on their second year. It's the Bird Dog Revival, and Tom Hall has been good enough to donate a little bit of his time to talk to us about it. Tom, welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be on your show.
You know, we were talking the other day, and we're both from Chester.
Yeah.
You don't mean
to hold. People don't associate, you know, that area of South Carolina with bird hunting, but, you know, it was a plentiful birds.
When we were growing up, we had, you know, we had a, or at least Ken Fleming had a pointer or a setter or something at different times, but you really didn't have to have a dog. You just knew where the birds were going to be at a certain time of the day.
Yep.
So we grew up.
We grew up on a little farm.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, if you would.
Well, I'm from Chester. I live in Columbia now, and I grew up. I was very, very lucky. I didn't realize it until, you know, I got a little bit older, how lucky I was growing up on a farm. My parents didn't farm. We had sharecroppers working on our farm, and they all bird hunted, and all bird dogs. And they would take their trucks to farm, and when they came over to bird hunt, they would take their cars and let the dogs out of the back of their trunks. Totally different. I mean, and my mother said, you can hunt the property all you want, but you got to take my sons. And so my brother and I grew up with these guys that were sharecropping farmers who loved to bird hunt and had these great working meat dogs that just let them out of the trunk and let them go, and we would just walk primarily soybean fields, and it was amazing. I mean, tons of wild birds. It was always we found birds. I don't recall not going out and finding birds, and that lasted through the mid-70s. I mean, late 76, 77, it just started fading, and after that, you know, we weren't hunting anymore because the birds had just were gone.
Yeah. It's about right. I remember the last few times I hunted wild birds, we had to go over to the MACBY and the Sandhills to find a couple of coveys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Tom, I was thinking, growing up bird hunting, and some of my fondest memories were with, you know, like I said, with Ken Fleming behind a Lou or Dixie, or I could name off half a dozen, a dozen dog names. But it kind of shaped, I don't know about you, but to me, it kind of shaped my whole outlook on hunting. You know, we go bird hunt, you'd shoot the covey rise, a bird or two, and you never touched the singles. You just moved on to another covey. And I think looking back on that, conservation, maybe better, no abuse of a natural resource maybe better, but conservation was always forefront, even though it wasn't talked about. Did you kind of pick that? Is that kind of the basis for your hunting lifestyle too?
Absolutely. I didn't know either one of my grandfathers. They were both, they weren't alive when I was born, but my grandfather had a book, The Old Man and the Boy by Robert Ruart. And my mother gave me that book when I was probably 11 years old. And I don't know how many times I've read it, but it was to me, you know, something, an inspiration, a source to learn. And I think that the whole aspect of quail hunting back in that day was gentleman's sport. There's a lot of respect for the bird, a lot of respect for the property, for the land, and the tradition of bird hunting. And as the birds went away, all that tradition began fading, and it became memories. And so I grew up with that. We also had horses, and I got to attend some field trials as a kid, as a guest.
Wow, that's...
You know, in Fort Mill and in Chester, they have field trials. And so I kind of made it a point in my life that I wanted to return to that when I could. And about 5 years ago, I'm 49, and about four or five years ago, I got back into it. and joined a field trial club.
Okay.
And joined the Association of South Carolina Field Trial Clubs, which, tell you a little bit about that. It's very, very rich history. Field trialing in South Carolina, and what is a field trial? A field trial is a way for people to get together and determine who's got the best bird dog on any given day. And, you know, it's pretty objective, but the rules have not changed since the 1870s. It's really the oldest organized sport that's continuing in our state. It would have been, you know, rooster fighting, but we don't do that anymore.
Sure.
And bird dogs and field trial competitions have been part of the rural sport lifestyle in our state. That completely, I guess it was strongest in the 60s.
Yeah.
Early 70s, but in the 50s, it was a big deal. We've got lots of pictures from the Mid-Carolina Field Trial Club in the 50s, where you'll have a gallery of 100 people on horseback, and then you would have 200 people out there watching the dogs come in on bird fields. So it was really a big deal in the community back in those days. And so the Association of South Carolina Field Trials began in the 1930s with the Sumter Gamecock Club, which is the oldest club in the state. That club actually went out of existence about 15 years ago. Brought that club back 3 years ago.
Okay.
So the remaining clubs, there used to be about 20 clubs, and now we have about 8 key clubs. And it's horseback field trialing, which is they're different. There's walking trials.
Right.
But the granddaddy of them all, the traditional field trial, is Tennessee walking horses and two dogs in a brace for an hour or a horse, and they point and flush. You don't shoot the birds.
Right.
They have a track pistol, recreate the whole the experience. And it's been that way from the beginning. So I always wanted to return to that. I was intimidated on getting back into it because you think about bird dogs and field trials, lots of equipment, you know, horses, all these moving parts.
Right.
But as soon as I went in, I realized how welcoming these people were because the sport is really searching new blood. I'm 49, and they look at me like I'm a puppy, and it makes me feel that way because these guys field trialing in their 70s,
right?
Some guys in their 80s,
right.
John Ray Kimbrell, Hall of Famer, just come back from the prairies, 84 years old.
Yeah.
And he's been working dogs out in South Dakota all summer. But so what we're doing is we're having an event. We've always had a fall meeting right before the trial season starts, and that's a meal and just, you know, a very organized meeting for all the trials, all the clubs to establish their dates, catch up on what's going on. And I wanted to, I became the secretary of the Field Trial Association, and I wanted to see what I could do to, you know, get some interest in the sport. And so we had something, decided let's do an event called Revival. And this year we had a great event last year. We had a little bit of bad weather, but we still had about 200 people show up.
Right.
That's a great turnout. So what we're doing this year, we want it to appeal to kids, to grandparents, to everybody. We want it to be an educational event that's a lot of fun. So we've got 4 bluegrass bands.
Oh, wow.
We've got a band called Liver Pudding. Can't go wrong with a band like that.
No, sir.
And we've got professional trainers will be there. We've got a pigeon demonstration. We use pigeons to train dogs.
Right.
By bringing a guy in who's going to bring a ton of pigeons and talk about that. We're going to have lots of birds there because I'm going to be releasing about 400 quail on my property that day. So we're going to have biologists there talking about land management, talking about habitat. We got a representative from the Congaree Land Trust talking about conservation easements. We have group DNR talking about the South Carolina Bobwhite Quail Initiative. Which is very a new thing. There's money available in the state if in a certain area of the state for quail habitat and working with landowners to improve their habitat. So we're going to learn about that. We're going to have wagon rides following the horseback, doing a little mini field trial. So we're going to really show people what we do, what it's all about, and most importantly, you know, show them how welcoming this would be. And even if you don't have a dog, you don't have a horse, you don't have any of that, you could go to any field trial, and they're typically in these beautiful locations, somebody's plantation.
Yes, sir.
In different parts of the state.
Right.
And the cost of admission, there is no cost. You pay $5 for one of the best meals you've ever had, and you get to meet these great people and eat a meal that, you know, you couldn't replicate. And it's just a very warm group of people that want the sport to continue and want to bring new people in. And, you know, I think that it will be great for people to come out and see it. If I had, you know, friends in town or anything, I'd want them to come and visit and learn more about bird dogs and what we do and just celebrate the sport.
You know, I've ridden some of those horseback trials over at the H. Cooper Black facility over Macby. Mm-hmm. What a great place to go. You know, if you've got horses, beautiful. That's just a beautiful place to go. And then when you hit up on a weekend or plan it where you can go and be in the gallery, ride behind, it's a lot different than what we did as kids walking, because walking, you kind of wanted that dog close and all. But, boy, when you get on these field on these horseback trials, those dogs run big.
It is big running and it is big action. And it is, I mean, I grew up with horses too, and I got tired of riding horses because I'm not a trail rider.
Okay.
And this is so different because these horses are moving with a purpose.
Right.
And a field trial horse, it's a game. They know the game. When you get off your horse, you drop reins, the horses don't move.
Right.
So it's a lot goes into it. But on the other hand, you know, if you keep it simple and just realize all the different elements are going on, it's a beautiful thing to watch. The dog is involved, the bird is involved, the horse is involved, and the rider is involved. And then everybody's, you know, able to watch that. And as soon as there's, you know, a dog going point, there's a handler and a scout. The scout is an outrider to keep his eye on the dog, and then your handler is handling the dog. And as soon as your dog's on point, everybody's galloping or loping towards that. So it's a lot of fast moving, hard riding. I tell you what, that makes for a great Saturday in November to be you know, beautiful location, ride all day, have a great meal, you know, kick back after that and enjoy the camaraderie. It's just good stuff, and we want people to experience that, because if they experience that, they're going to want to protect habitat. They're going to want to keep the interest in bird dogs and keep these great traditions going.
Well, I don't know whether I don't want to end this now, but and we'll hit this again, but where is all this taking place on Saturday?
It's in Ridgeway, South Carolina, which is close to Greenville. Hour and 15 minutes, hour and 20 minutes.
Okay.
But Ridgeway is right above Columbia.
Okay.
And it's on my farm. It's called Magnolia Farm. It's right outside of town. We have nice facilities there. If somebody wanted to camp, we have a place they wanted to camp. So that'd be fine with us too. But the address is 631 Longtown Road in Ridgeway, right past Ridgeway. It's right in the downtown Ridgeway, nearby farm.
Okay.
And we'll have plenty of signs if people want to come and show up.
Okay. talking about bird dogs, I grew up behind pointers and setters mostly. Then the Britneys made their appearances, and I've seen some Gordon setters at work, which are really pretty. What kind of dogs do you like when it comes to bird dog?
Well, I love an English pointer, which in the sport that I'm in, the type field trial that we do, you know, you have a shooting dog and you have an all-age dog,
okay.
Two different styles. The shooting dog works a little bit closer, but the pointers are the traditional dog that most people field trial with in South Carolina. The English setter is the second most popular dog, I would say. Now, the setter's is having a revival in itself.
Is it?
The dog is Shadow Oak Bow.
Okay.
Won the national championship 2 years in a row, and that was the first setter that had won the national championship, I think, since 1970. Before that, it was 1930.
Okay.
So the pointer's been dominant, mainly because it can run. It has a short hair, doesn't get so hot.
Right.
Very bold dog, big running, and that's really what the judges like to see, and that's mainly what we have on our circuit.
You know, when you mention that word circuit right there, this is, we talk about a fall, but this is actually a competition. And I don't think a lot of people, the bird dog revival is just getting people involved. And when you have dogs and horses and speakers and all that, it's a family event. when you go onto the field trial circuit, and it starts, what, for you in October, I suppose?
Starts in October and goes to end of February.
And during this whole time, that dog is accumulating, is it a point system? I've been out of it a while.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a point system. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a point system, and the American Field is the oldest sporting dog magazine. They keep up with it, and everybody has, you know, you get certain points for the length of the trial, the number of dogs that enter the trial. So they calculate it based on, like, if you had six dogs at the trial there's and you win first place and it's a 30-minute stake, that would be a certain score. If it was the same with an hour stake, you get additional points. So it's graded like that, and we have a banquet at the end of the year and have awards. And they used to have a huge banquet down at Spring May Beach in Garden City, and that would be very social, you know, have a little dance, have an event, have a meal. And now we do it in our old at Mid-Carolina Field Trial Club in Camden. But I mentioned that just to say how the sport has changed and kind of gotten smaller. We're trying to, you know, grow it again and just expose it to people. And I think that we're doing a good job and we're having some success.
Okay.
We've actually had – we've been losing field trial clubs since the 70s.
Okay.
And we –
Which would pretty much coincide with the...
Sorry about that.
No, which would pretty much coincide with the decrease in the quail populations.
Right. And so we've actually added two new field trial clubs in the last 3 years. That's the first time we've added clubs and revived the clubs. So we are making progress.
Very good. Well, this is the second annual Bird Dog Revival sponsored by the Association of South Carolina Field Trial Clubs. In Ridgeway, South Carolina, you know, I trained some setters and guided some bird hunts. And there's, I don't know about you, but to me, when you take that and in training a bird dog, it's really neat. You got I used a cane pole, a little bit of fishing line and a bird wing, and you just let those puppies just chase and wear themselves out. And all it takes, that instinct is there, and you know it's there because you're teasing them with that wing, and they jump at it and pounce at it, and all of a sudden the light goes off, and it's like, I can stop, and maybe I can pounce on it. And they stop and freeze, tails up, and you know, I'm there. That dog is ready to go.
It really is. It's like art. I mean, you know, you get wax poetic and all, but it really is a beautiful thing to see the nature and these dogs who... Their entire brain is geared towards finding that bird and eating that bird grabbing that bird. You know, they're hunting the bird.
That's right.
And all those wires are good to do that. And when mankind or we get involved and are able to restrain them, even through the wing and shot, steady to wing and shot, it's beautiful.
It is.
And it's rewarding for the dog. Rewarding for the owner. Obviously, there's a tremendous affection for both, and it's when you field trial, you're competing against other field trialers, but you're also competing independently on your own. You want to get your dog around the course, and you want to be able to finish, and you want to be able to handle your dog, and so you get a lot of satisfaction by watching your dog work and how it goes through. But it's really a lifetime sport. I'm glad I found it because I'll be doing it, you know, for the rest of my life. And if you want to go spend $5 million on a plantation, go for it.
Sure.
If you just want to go ride on a plantation on a beautiful horse and dogs and see all this and pay $5 for lunch, that's more of my ticket.
Yep.
And you get the benefit of all that, and you meet these great, wonderful people who make you feel so welcome on these awesome pieces of land. And, you know, on the weekends, this is just great sport, and we want people to know about it.
Well, you got an opportunity, if you're listening, people, the 24th, which is next Saturday, Ridgeway, South Carolina. You can go experience all that Tom and I have been talking about. Take your kids, because they're going to be puppies and bird dogs and horses. And, of course, hey, the temperature is getting right, isn't it, Tom?
It is. It's going to be good, and we think we'll have great weather, and it's going to be a nice day.
Well, I encourage people to go find out more about bird dogs, the Field Trial Association. And I tell you, all it takes is one time exposure. And a lot of people go, I think this is for me. And you'd be surprised how easy it is to get involved if you got the interest.
Sure.
I appreciate it, Tom. You take care of yourself. And if I can work it out, I'm going to try to be there next Saturday.
That sounds great. Thank you for letting me be on your show.
Yes, sir. Thank you for making time, and we'll talk to you soon. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I hope if you have time on the 24th and you want to have a great weekend, like I said, the weather's going to be incredible, low 80s. Last year, I think they had a rain, had over 200 people show up, and I think they're expecting a lot more this year. But if you have a chance and you've never been around bird dogs, or maybe you've been around bird dogs growing up like I was, this is a great opportunity to go see some great dogs, hear from some great people. I know Ken Fleming, I talk about him every once in a while on the show. He was my Take One, Make One mentor back in the early 70s before Take One, Make One was a program at Department of Natural Resources. He kind of took me under his wing. He was good enough to let me trail along behind him and his bird dogs and, you know, later on dove hunting. And, you know, I talked to him just the other day on the phone about this very event. And he's going to be there speaking. He's going to talk about NASTRA, which is the National Shoot to Retrieve Association. I did some of those back when I had bird dogs. I had setters, English setters. The last pair I had was Bell and Trouble. And like Tom and I were talking, you know, you start out with a puppy, and all they want to do is run, and you drag that bird feather wing in front of them, and they pounce on it, and they chase it and all. And all it takes is that one time, and you hang it out there, and the light goes off, and they say, oh, maybe I stop, I can pounce on it. And they stop, the tail goes out, and from there on, you've got a bird dog. Just a little bit of training after that. So anyway, hope you have time. Make time to go down there and be a part of that. And see what it's all about. And the horses, when he talks about horses, you're talking about some cool things. So anyway, hang on through the break. We'll be back on the other side with more Woods and Water, South Carolina. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I hope you're having a great Saturday. I think about this time I'll be listening to some pretty good sponsors give their presentations at the South Carolina Outdoor Press Association convention down at the Wild Turkey Federation in Edgefield. So hope you're enjoying the show. You know, we did this interview back in August, which was Tree Stand Safety Month with Jerry Widener, Hunter Safety Systems, and I just was looking the other day on Facebook, and here's a post from a friend of mine whose dad had an accident in a tree stand. And here's what happened. Both his legs are broken. He broke three ribs. He's got internal bleeding. And they're waiting to have the results of where the bleeding's coming from. All of this because he fell out of a tree stand, which is why it is so important. You know, last year I had a friend, Scott Hammond, at Hadrell's Point, was putting up tree steps, going up the tree, and fell off 12 feet. He's lucky. I think he realizes he's lucky. I don't think he's ever going up a tree again without a safety harness, a lifeline. And it's such a simple thing. A safety harness you can buy for about $100. The lifelines are about $30 a piece. I think you get a three-pack for $90. That is small price of, I guess, what you call insurance against an accident, because an accident is that for a reason. We don't think it happened to us, but it can, and it just did to a friend of mine, his dad. That's cheap, you know, $130 to be safe when you're going up in a tree stand, especially when you have kids going along with you. You know, what's their life worth, or the rest of their life? Because this guy's going to be in a wheelchair for months before he can get his legs straightened out and get back on. And then you got therapy after that. So it's not something to be taken lightly. Deer hunters, I hope when you go into the woods this year, make it a point. Grab that safety harness. Have that lifeline attached to those tree stands, because the results are not pretty, and this post shows it. So we're going to listen to Jerry talk about hunters' tree stand safety again. It's not just a me and the deer stand issue. It's a family issue, as you're in this interview. So listen, and then please be safe this year in the tree stand.
You know, this is take two of an interview that I did a couple of weeks ago with Jerry Widener. It came out sounding something like Charlie Brown in class. Jerry, I appreciate you taking time on a Saturday to do it again with me.
Rod, it's always a pleasure, buddy. Good to be with you.
I appreciate it. I am kicking myself, though, Jerry, because a couple of weeks ago I was in Huntsville for a week, and I had no idea that you were that close.
Yeah, you were right in my backyard.
Yeah. And for some reason, 205 area code tipped me off, and after we talked last time, I said, surely not. And I pulled it up, and you're about what? You're just across Wheeler Lake on the other side, about 15 miles.
Yeah, you could have just casting rod and just cast it right over to me.
That's it. Well, folks, we're on with Hunter Safety Systems co-owner Jerry Widener. For August is Tree Stand Safety Awareness Month. He's been good enough to do this for a couple of years now. And I want to frame this whole conversation we're going to have. This is a family issue. Right, Jerry?
Exactly, it is. Personal and family. And family. Is.
Because it's not just me picking up a gun and going deer hunting. It's a safety thing that affects a lot of people around you, and I'm going to let you take it and roll with it. But Hunter Safety Systems, you kind of got a message, and I'd love for you to start out with that logo that's right across the front of your webpage.
You know, our slogan is saving lives is what we do. And Roger, you and I have talked about that in the past. And, you know, Hunter Safety System doesn't make the fastest shooting bow or the sharpest broadhead. We're about saving lives. That's all we do, and that's what we study all the time. And I think one of the keys that has made us successful and made us popular to our hunters is the fact that our products, first of all, are hunter-friendly. They're easy to use. They're not complicated. We're hunters ourselves.
Okay.
All of us here at Hunter Safety System, we're bow hunters, so we're experiencing the same issues you and all your listeners have, and we're concerned about making sure that you get home safe to those that love you.
That's a successful hunt. In my household, me leaving early in the morning or lunchtime, you know, whatever I do while I'm out, my family, I've had a good day when I walk through the door at night.
Absolutely. You know, and again, we spoke about this in the fact that if a person chooses not to wear a harness, and I want this to come across the right way, but
sure.
I will tell people all the time that you're very selfish in making that decision, because somebody is now going to have to pick up the responsibilities of perhaps taking care of the issues at hand if you were to fall. Imagine, Roger, you and I hunting, you decide not to wear a harness and you fall, and maybe the worst happens. You die from that fall.
Right.
I'm the one that has to take care of everything. I've got to go to your wife. I've
sure.
got to go to the family. I've got to get you out of the woods. I've got to get EMS. And it's a selfish issue that we're placing on our fellow hunters, on others that don't need to have that type of responsibility placed on them.
Right.
And it's so simple. It's easy. The products are well made today. They're easy to put on. They're not expensive. They'll last for years. And there's just not a lot of excuses. You know, in the past, we've all used excuses. I know I have.
No,
and
I have.
We're all guilty of it.
Sure.
And we'll say, well, you know, I'm just going to hang one stand. Or I'm just going to run out there this afternoon. I'll be right back. I'll be gone for 2 hours. I'll be right back in. Oh, I forgot my harness. I'm going to go ahead and climb anyway. Well, those things happen. I mean, certainly they do. And we're in a hurry. When we're going hunting, we want to go hunting.
Sure.
Safety's not the thing on our mind. It's getting in that tree. It's getting out there and enjoy that hunt.
Right.
So I understand the challenges of it, but we owe it to those that love us and expect us and depend on us to come home safe to do just that.
And folks, if you're listening and you think, yeah, this is good, sure, whatever, I encourage you to go to the huntersafetysystem.com website. Front page, scroll down the page on the right-hand side. First box on the left will be life stories. And if you click on that, you're going to read stories from people just like you and I who, well, you know, they were lucky. They were wearing their suspension systems and had an accident. But because they were attached to that tree, they were able to write about it.
Yeah, and you know, there are so many people that still fall.
Sure.
And it's And it's just a matter of numbers. I mean, we have a lot of us that hunt, a lot of us that hunt from trees, and we know the advantages of being elevated, so we certainly want to take advantage of that. And you know another thing, Roger, the products today, the tree stands, the ladders, the steps, the straps, the harnesses, the ropes, they're better and stronger than ever before.
Right.
They've never, ever been made any better than they're made right today, but yet we still fall. Mm-hmm. And most of it is human error. It's something we've done ourselves. But my point in saying that is we can't just sit there and depend on the fact that, well, you know what, this tree stand is safe. I've used this many, many times. I know it's going to be there. Well, it probably will. Mm-hmm. And odds are you're right.
Yeah.
But for every odd, there's another odd. There's the other side of that coin.
Uh-huh.
And I know I'm talking to people all the time, continuously. I don't care if I'm at a show, if I'm speaking somewhere, or I'm just in a room. Somebody will come up to me and tell me their experience. And I hear it over and over and over. If it wasn't them that fell, it was their brother-in-law,
uh-huh.
or it was a person in their hunting camp, or their uncle, or somebody. And I know I've heard this over and over again. You know, there's two types of hunters today, those that have fallen. And, you know, if you're not one that has fallen,
those
you're not one
that
has.
Right, right.
And it's just a sad thing. But it's all preventable. That's
right.
The good news.
Yep.
And the products are made today to keep you safe, not only while you're in that tree stand, but to keep you safe from the moment they leave the ground
mm-hmm.
until they return to the ground.
Yep.
And that's the key, just like you and I have talked in the past. It's not a matter of getting up in that tree stand and hooking up. It's a matter of saying, okay, I'm getting ready to take my first step off the ground. I need to be hooked right now.
Right. Yeah, let the tree catch you.
That's right. Absolutely. You know, don't let the ground catch you.
Right. Let the tree catch me. I finally met you at Archery Trade back in January. We talked. You had some new products there that I think... You know, they're not so much in hunting, but I know in fishing there are a lot of lures out there that catch fishermen. With hunting, there are a lot of products out there that, kind of nice options and all. But Hunter Safety Systems has some good stuff. You had some new stuff at ATA, and I tell you, I didn't mention this back when we did our first take on this, but you got something out there called a hanger.
Yeah.
And I wanted, and if anybody's listening and knows Hadrell's Point down in Charleston, South Carolina, is one of my favorite tackle stores down there. And one of my good friends down there, Scott Hammond. And last year, before bow season, Scott was hanging a stand. His harness was in his truck. He climbed up 12 feet off the ground and fell.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when he landed flat on his back. He was in near some cypress trees, and he looked and he said, about 2 feet to my right was a cypress knee.
Oh, wow.
So he was one of the, and he told me, he said he was stiff and sore. I think he's got a little crack in one of his vertebra, but he said it could have been so much different. He said, when I started up that tree, I said, you know, my harness is right there. Oh, but I'm just going to hang this stand in a couple of ladder sections. And that's what you made the hanger product for.
Yep,
just hanging
exactly.
Your tree stands.
You know, the hanger harness is brand new, you know, like you're talking about. We're really excited about this product because it goes outside the boundaries of hunting harnesses.
Right.
And it's the first and only utility tree stand harness that's made not for hunting.
Right.
It's made for doing all the activities and chores that we do. We have to install those steps.
Mm-hmm.
Stands, cut those shooting lanes, put up our cams, all the little chores and activities that have to be done, most of them are being done while we're elevated.
That's right.
And what this harness is made for is to carry all the tools needed to do those chores. If you can picture a harness that has these side saddlebags on either side, and they're extremely deep, they're double pocketed, and there's pouches and clips and hooks mm-hmm. and areas to just keep every single thing you can possibly think of.
Right.
And it's made out of material and a fabric that will allow you to take care of the rigors of hanging all the clips you have to do. It's got to be durable. And I think the one...
Jerry?
hang a stand.
Yeah.
With one trip up the tree. Well, that's almost unheard of, you know, because you got to come back, get your next ladder section.
Sure.
You got to come back and get this. You've got to come back or throw me up my saw. Or, you know the way it goes. We've all been there.
Sure.
I don't know what that is. Well, I can start up the tree, and I've got everything I need with me. It's
right.
All there. And so I'm one top of the tree. By the way, I'm staying attached to that tree the whole time as well.
That's right, yeah.
So I'm safe, and I've got all of my gear. And there's a couple things that we've added into this hanger harness that really makes it unique as well. Because when you do start filling up those pouches with your snips, your saw, your lifelines, your steps, your all the things that you need to go up there, you've got quite a bit of weight.
Sure.
So we've doubled the padding in the shoulders on this.
Okay.
So it makes it so nice and comfortable. That weight is being distributed on your shoulders. And which is very nice, by the way, rather than having something around your neck or tied to your waist, it's wrapped around you. So mm-hmm. It distributes the weight around your body.
Okay.
And that extra padding really does make a difference. You know, another feature of this is the pockets on the side that hold all your gear are movable. You can slide it to the front of you while you're in your stand, mm-hmm. Get whatever gears, tools, devices you need, slide it back around towards your back, get it out of the way while you're working. So it's really designed with a lot of thought because you and I have hung a lot of tree stands.
Mm-hmm. Place, yes.
And we know what has to be done. We know the problems we have while we're up there. And the hanger harness is going to make your life so much easier.
And one of the really cool things that you showed me while I was here is you actually have two clips for your extra ladder sections. If you're hanging
right.
tree steps, you can hang your first one on the ground, climb up, and you've got two more sections attached to that harness. They're back out of the way, so they're not in the way of you climbing, but they're right there for you just to reach and grab them.
Yep, exactly. I have found that I can take my ladder sections. The first two sections I actually hang while my feet are still on the ground.
Okay.
And as I'm climbing, I've got two more sections that are attached. There's a place to actually attach it. It's made for that.
That's
to
right.
hang those ladder sections on your sides. So as I get up there and I need that, it's right here. I don't have to come back or tell my buddy, hey, throw me up in the next ladder section. No, I've got it.
You got it.
Go hang the next stand. I'll take care of this.
That's right. Yep. Well, another one that you had there, and archery has been big, and crossbows have really taken off, and you've actually got a harness especially designed and tested for crossbow hunters.
You know, this was a challenge for me because I'm not a crossbow
You're not a crossbow
hunter,
guy.
No, I don't have anything against it. Mm-hmm. I love them. I just shoot my vertical bow.
Sure.
And that's how I always hunt. But so I really had to get the advice from a lot of people.
Okay.
I called in several crossbow hunters and got them, and we got into a big, long discussion. And the point was, tell me the problems you're having. Tell me the issues you have as a crossbow hunter. What makes your life miserable? Where do you have your problems? So I've got to understand the problems in order to find a fix to those problems.
Sure.
But some of the things that we did with this, and one of the issues that came up continuously was people were saying, I forget my cocking device when I get out to my tree. It's back in the truck. Or it's in my other jacket. Or
right.
It's just somewhere up on me. Well, that's one thing we decided right off the bat. We made a special zipper pocket that when you put that cocking device in there, zip it up, it's always there.
Right.
You've always got it with you. You're never going to leave and not have it. So that was one issue. Another issue was, we found out that crossbow hunters traditionally don't use binoculars. And I wouldn't have known that, but they said, no, you know, we've got a scope on the crossbow itself, and normally we're holding that crossbow in our lap, so
sure.
We normally use our scope.
Okay.
So I thought, okay, well, we bother with bino straps, but what they said they do need is the rangefinder.
Sure.
So we decided to put in a rangefinder ripcord that actually is attached on the inner side of the upward strap between your vertical strap and your shoulder, and it hangs down to about your area. And that's where you connect your rangefinder. Now, why there and what's the significance of that?
Go ahead.
the significance is I can reach, grab my rangefinder. It's on the end of that cord. If I need to just drop it because, ooh, there he is, I got to go. I got to shoot.
Right.
I can just let go of it.
Right.
The other thing is it sits perfectly between the layer of my harness and my body around my waist area, which means it doesn't take up any pocket space.
I see. Okay.
So it, again, was just a convenient situation that helps with, and not just crossbow hunters, but particularly crossbow hunters.
Okay.
Another issue that came up in that long conversation with the people, they said one of the problems they have is when they bend over to their bow, the tether of their harness is hanging down in front of them and gets in the way of them trying to cock the bow.
All right.
And I thought, you know what, you're right. I could see that happening. So we just made a nice little elastic strap right there in the harness to just take your tether and just slip it right down in there. It holds it out of the way. Simple little device, a simple fix, but those that are extremely important to crossbow hunters. So we've taken a lot of time and effort to make sure that we're taking care of the needs of the crossbow hunter. It has a hidden cell phone pocket also to make sure that you've got access to the cell phone. It's nice. It's gone over very well. Crossbow hunters, okay, I think, like it because we've kept them in mind. It's not just another harness. It doesn't have just a different color. It's made specifically for those crossbow hunters.
Very good. One of the coolest things, and we got a couple minutes here. One of the coolest things you showed me at ATA was, now we're in the Kentucky Exposition Center, you know, bright lights, 1.2 million square feet of display space. And we walked off about 20 yards from the HSS booth, and he said, you see that lifeline? And when we talk about lifeline, that's what we're talking about, staying connected to the tree. He said, the lifeline? I said, sure, it's black, you know, it's hanging there. And he goes, watch this. Now, he pulls out a flashlight, and he shines at that lifeline, and it lights up like a Christmas tree. And I was, I'm sorry, I'm easily amused, or but it was just really neat, because how many of us have been in the woods, you know, looking for our tree stands and can't find them? Well, now you've got a fix for that.
You know what, Roger? Everybody reacted the same way you did because, you know, you sit there, you're inside a very lit building. You're
sure
not expecting much of anything. You take a flashlight. What if we're using a flashlight inside this building?
Sure.
It'd be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Well, all of a sudden, you shine, like you said, all of a sudden it just comes alive.
Whoa.
And when it comes alive to that degree inside lighted conditions, you can only imagine the value that brings you in the middle of the night when you're trying to find that stand.
Yeah.
And you're in the dark. I'll tell you another thing it really does well for you is if you've got a hunter that's never hunted that particular stand and
right,
you're trying to explain to him where it is, you've got to walk him all the way to that stand to make sure he finds it. Well, you don't have to do that.
Well, I was just fixing to tell you, you can say, go down here and turn right. If you can't find it, sit on the ground.
Yes, you'll find it. You definitely will find it.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was just a great one. You put the cowbell, the rubber cowbell on the lifelines now?
Yeah, the cowbell cover, which is a patented design that we came up with that is a layer between the carabiner and any metallic metal device like your stand or your steps that will keep it from clinging. So that was one of the negatives as a person is going up with a lifeline that they come in contact and cling. Well, nobody wants that. So, again, it was a simple fix. We took care of that with a cowbell cover, and it's another one of those things that went over really well. I'm amazed at how many just plain cowbell covers were selling.
Oh, very good. Well, Jerry, it's great to talk to you. It was really good to meet you. I hope to see you again at ATA next January in Indianapolis, I think, this year. Anytime you need anything, give me a call. I appreciate you doing take two with me today because this is an important issue to me. It should be an important issue to every hunter, every hunter's family. And we appreciate what you do.
Listen, I appreciate you, Roger. And just a parting word is think of those that love you and expect you to come home safe and depend on you to come home safe. Keep that in mind when you walk the woods.
Have a great deer season, Jerry. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Roger.
Yes, sir. Be back on the other side. Welcome back to Woods and Water, South Carolina. And I've got a couple minutes here left in this week. And it's amazing always how fast the time passes. I was fortunate enough to be invited up to the Plateau Fishing Fly Fishing Club in Cashiers, North Carolina, to speak at their club meeting this past Monday night. Had a great time. I think I went a half an hour over the allotted time, but nobody was getting up and leaving for the door, so I expect I did a pretty good job, and we had a good time. It was a lot of interaction, and if you're interested in fly fishing, which I think is, well, and medical research has proven is one of the best ways to relieve stress, look around the area. You know, Plateau is up in Cashiers, so if you're over in that part of eastern North Carolina or western North Carolina, upstate South Carolina, up towards the mountains, they'd love to have your participation. I know they were having a streamer class. They have several meetups for fishing. They have monthly club meetings during the year. I encourage you to find a club. Get involved. I mean, it's a wealth of information. It's somebody to go fishing with. It's somebody to get you started if you've never been fly fishing. We just had a great time. I appreciate Mr. Bill's inviting me up to do that and meeting some of the guys there. And it gave me a chance to kind of go back over some of the trips that I've done to Canada, Alaska. Shad fishing, they thought that was really interesting. It's one of the simplest types of fishing you can do with a fly rod. So had a good time. I appreciate them inviting me up there. And I guess to end the show this week, I got a quote about a dog from Robert Rourke, who we heard from earlier. Never knew a man not to be improved by a dog. And that's the truth. So, hey, make time to get out there. Be careful when you do. As always, take the back roads and never forget that camera. See you next week here on Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Can't you see the sunshine? Can't you just feel the moonshine? Ain't it just like